Blog Talk Radio.
It's time for Licking on Lending.
Welcome, everybody. Good to have you with us.
Welcome to Licking on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update providing up-to-the-minute information on interest rates, loan programs, and hot industry news, all related to the mortgage industry. Brought to you by Transformational Mortgage Solutions. To participate in today's program, our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. And now here's your host of Licking on Lending, David Licking.
Let's begin.
Good to have you with us, everybody. This has been an interesting series of podcasts we've been having on GSE reform. We're going to be continuing those in today's Hot Topic segment. It's Monday, July 31st. It's been a hot one here in Texas. It's been hot in different parts of the country, unusually warm. But we also then have the hot topic here, so we're continuing the heat. Again, this podcast is created by mortgage professionals. It is for mortgage professionals, and we're grateful to have you as a mortgage professional and an increasing number of realtors and legislators now listening to this podcast. Our commitment to you is to bring you timely information in an audio format that you can listen to anytime and anywhere. More and more people tell us they listen to us while driving in, on a train, commuting, on airplanes. Working out is getting to be a one, so I always like that. I wish I could get some of the benefit of them working out listening to the podcast. How great would that be? Anyway, just so excited to have with us on our Hot Topic panel today, Joe Murin, the past president of the Ginnie Mae. Real unique perspective Joe has, as well as Jay Brinkman, the past chief economist for the MBA, and Gary Ort, who was the president of the mortgage finance at Texas Capital Bank. And then that is representing a new group, myself included. The one that's missing from this group is Les Parker. We have his recorded comments. He can't join us today. But this group of individuals now represent a new board of advisors that we're bringing to the mortgage industry. And Texas Capital Bank signed up as the first one to jump on board. So we're honored to have most of the board with us, myself, Joe Murin, Jay Brinkman, Gary Ort, and again, Les Parker will not be with us. But we're really looking forward to getting their comments. It'll give you a sample about the whole concept of what we're doing with the board of advisors. It's for anyone that's looking for advice, a broad advice on what's going on, and we'll talk more about that a little bit later in the program. I want to say a special thank you to our sponsors, Arch MI, the creator of the innovative RateStar program, Motivity Solutions, now part of the Black Knight family, providing real-time reporting, dashboards, and scorecards on your performance, a real-time environment. It's really amazing. And then also Velma, which stands for the Virtual Electronic Marketing Assistant. We use them extensively for our marketing. What a great service. Brent Embler and the team's excellent. And then also the Mortgage Collaborative, the power of the network. We're proud to be a part of that. Transformational Mortgage Solutions and the radio program is a part of the Mortgage Collaborative. And we've got a summer conference we'll talk about just in a minute. Then we have Finastra. Finastra, it was the old D&H, which was, again, Vista bought Finastra. Vista bought D&H and MySys has combined the companies together now and have become one of the nation's largest fintech firms in the United States and also globally. So a lot of good things going on with D&H. You're going to hear more about them a little bit later when we play their ad. Anyway, here's some upcoming MBA conferences. We have the October 22nd through the 25th. October 21st through the 25th, the annual convention and expo at the Colorado Convention Center. And I encourage you to get registered. The registrations, this is going to be a very well-intended event, in part because of the discussion we're having here today on the Hot Topic segment about GSE reform. Now, there's another conference coming up here in a few weeks, the TMC, the Mortgage Collaborative Summer Conference. It's August 20th through the 23rd in Nashville, Tennessee. Jim Blanchard, good friend and a partner in the consulting firm, works with me in the consulting firm, is going to be the kickoff speaker. He's going to be talking about how you can get your teams talking to each other more effectively and bringing them together and understanding how each of us are wired. It's a really compelling kickoff session, and I'm really excited to have Jim and share Jim with everyone here in the mortgage industry. So if you're not planning to attend the conference, be sure to go sign up. You can go to TMC Summer Conference. I just Google it. It comes right up. It'll bring you right to the website, and you can get registered. Encourage you to check out all of the MBA's conferences and the education services that the MBA provides. Google MBA Conferences and Education. It'll all come up. And then you can also head over to Sam Garcia's website, Mortgage Daily. He has a great lineup of all the conferences and more conferences there than you can imagine. So, anyway, special thank you goes out to Alice, and today we have Alice, we have Sam Garcia joining us, and our good friend, Joe Farr. And let's go over to Joe to get a read on what's happening in the markets.
That's pretty easy today, nope. Dave, nothing.
Nothing?
The MBS, yeah, I don't remember a day that we've seen less movement in MBS prices, but it has just absolutely been flat. And, yeah, it's not bad. We've had a few days last week that were a little volatile, so it's not bad to have a flat day. Today, some data came out. Chicago PMI was a little below expectations, and pending home sales were a little better than expected, so it was good to see. Up 1.5% when 1% was expected. And, you know, the same thing, though, low inventories are continue to constrain sales. You know, the interesting thing is stock market's at an all-time high. Even today, we're up again 90 basis points on the Dow. It's just right at 22,000.
Wow.
Good if you own stock.
Yeah.
But last week net, for the week, there wasn't a whole lot of movement in MBS prices or mortgage rates. It was a good week for the Dow last week. As I mentioned, they were up 250 points last week. Not so for the NASDAQ, but generally stocks have been doing well. During the week, MBS prices fell on Tuesday ahead of the Wednesday Fed meeting. Some of that was due to strong data. The consumer confidence number came out well above expected, and it was, quite frankly, it was like the second best reading of the decade of the, the 20th century, 21st century.
Wow.
And then on Wednesday, you know, a lot of that drop in MBS prices on Tuesday was related to the Fed meeting coming up on Wednesday. You know, it's concerned about what they might or might not say. And in fact, they said very little new information. And on Wednesday, after the fact of no new surprises, there was a nice rally back on MBS prices and came back to where they'd been before the drop on Tuesday. Right now, it's kind of investors are expecting some guidance on the start of the balance sheet reduction, probably at the September meeting. And the chances of a Fed funds rate hike this year are now down to about 50-50. If that'll happen, and if it does happen, it would likely be in December. So, during the week, the other things that came out were new and existing home sales. Both came out very close to expected. Durable orders rose more than expected. And we saw the first look at second quarter GDP. It was up 2.6%. Good, strong consumer spending and business investment contributed to that improvement over the first quarter. The first quarter was revised lower to 1.2 from 1.4. Oh. And then looking
this
at
week,
this
though.
Week coming up, yeah, there's a lot on the calendar this week. Tomorrow's consumer personal income and core PCE, June core PCE, which will be announced tomorrow, is expected to come out at 1.4%, which is the same it was in May. So, you know, still low and seems to be hanging there. Also tomorrow's ISM manufacturing. Then on Thursday's ISM services index. Both of those come out at 10. And then on Friday, the big jobs report. Right now, the consensus is for jobs to show an increase of about 180,000. Unemployment rate to drop from 4.4 to 4.3, and average hourly earnings to rise 0.3. That's up from a 0.2 increase in June. So that's about it.
Lots of information. I don't know how people navigate these markets, even though we're having a flat day today, but we get lulled in these
today.
Flat days. I don't need it today. Just kind of go out there and have some fun, enjoy the markets. But, boy, when the markets are volatile, I think we do have some volatile days ahead.
I think we do.
What do you if the what's contributing to the 22,000 level? I mean, that is, I mean, equities are doing so amazing. What's your read on that? And is this going to continue will it hurt at some point? Or how does it impact the MBS prices? We got Jay. He'll give us his perspective later on. But
yeah, well, I hate to give an opinion in front of Jay because his is the one that matters. But there's an interesting chart that shows the path of the Dow, and it almost mirrors the path of the balance sheet increase for the Fed. The Fed's balance sheet has stopped growing, obviously, but as they begin to shrink it, and then as the ECB begins to shrink it, I think we'll see a little flattening out, and some of the incentive to buy is going to diminish, and we'll see stocks probably flatten out for a while.
Yeah, it's at some point in time you should wonder, how high does how low can you go in the limbo world, but how high can you go with these equities? It's really interesting. When do the corrections start happening and the adjustments? So fascinating time. We just got a dividend check in, and I go, whoa, time to get in the market bigger way? And I go, no,
yeah.
I don't know. But this is a great report. Appreciate it. Your service, Joe, is very valuable for those of you who are listening, who are not using any service. You just got to check out MBS Quote Line. And to learn how to do so, stay tuned and listen to this message. We'll be right back after this brief break.
Looking for that competitive edge? MBS QuoteLine delivers live market coverage for originators. Get up-to-the-minute mortgage market news and analysis as events occur.
Get MBS prices as trades happen.
Straight to your computer, email, cell phone, or PDA. Know in advance when your investors will reprice. Make better lock-float decisions and increase your income. Be the expert your clients expect. And know what's moving interest rates right now, tomorrow, and beyond. MBS QuoteLine, delivering live market coverage for originators. Learn more about MBS QuoteLine today at MBSQuoteLine.com.
MBSQuoteLine.com.
646-716-4972. The Lickin' on Lending Show is back. Here is your host, David Lickin.
Yeah, I appreciate you tuning in. More people have dialed in. Again, this is the July 31st podcast. Again, we say that for many of you who listen on a downloaded basis. I'll repeat it several times throughout the podcast. You remember which one you listened to. Well, Les Parker, who is a part of this advisor group that we formed, very excited to have him on that. He won't be joining us live, but he, as he does now each week, provides us a perspective, more of a macro perspective on the markets, what's going on. And so Les pre-recorded the following, and he always puts it to a music parody. So let's see what he's got for us this time. Here you go, Les.
Thanks, Dave. This is Market Logics Live, sponsored by Loan Logic. Fee-fi-fo-fum. Look out, market, because here it comes. The Fed bringing you a load that's true, so get ready. Get ready. Last week, the Fed made a big announcement. Did its affirmation to reduce its balance sheet relatively soon increase Treasury yields? Does lower accommodation increase liquidity? What do investors do when financing rates are low? Do investors leverage stock? What does leverage lead to? Do short-term investment strategies or long-term investment strategies build the greatest wealth? These views are my own. Go to LoanLogics.com to subscribe to my daily newsletter.
Well, yeah, but get ready for what? So we're going to get more perspective of Les. It's always fun to have him. And we're getting a lot of feedback on Les's segment. It's relatively new to the podcast, and we're glad to have Loan Logic's Les Parker part of the program. Without further ado, let's get over to Alice Alvey, who is Senior Vice President, Executive Vice President, Senior Vice President, Union Home Mortgage. What's your new title there, Alice? I got to make sure I get it right in here. Is that Senior Vice President or Executive Vice President?
I'm taking a step down. I'm a VP. That's plenty for
you're
me.
A VP.
VP of Education and Training. Yes, it's the perfect place to be. So,
but it's a step up because it's a great company. Although Indicom is good. I didn't mean to make it sound – I didn't want that to make it sound disparaging, but it's a step up because you're back in the mortgage industry and back with a legislative update. So what you got?
Well, thank you. So I thought just for a few minutes, since we don't have a lot going on with August as Congress is out of town, and we certainly want to allow enough time to really get the astute group to give us lots of their insight on the ZSE reform. For our segment right now, I want to give everybody a heads up on what are they thinking from these bills that were introduced by a few Congress people at the end of June, and now the text is out, and I've had a chance to look at it. And these are things, folks, that just, this is supposed to be a little bit of humor, I think, in here, right? So we have one congressperson, H.R. 3134, transforming student debt to home equity. What a great idea. If you go borrow more for your student loan, we're going to give you equity in a home. I don't get how this works. And when you try and read the bill, they clearly don't have any idea how this might work either. It just looks good in the title. And if the idea was to help those with student loans be able to buy a home that's in foreclosure. Now, the good part about that bill is at least they put in some meaningful statistics. So in the Q4 of 2016, there were still over 17.2 million vacant homes out there, and 40 million Americans have at least one outstanding student loan. So I thought those were interesting numbers. Yes, it serves a lot of people, but I'm not sure how you take student loans and turn it into home ownership equity. So they have to work on some checks there. Then we have three bills that got introduced in June that are going after servicing and trying to button this up to where we just would have some crazy regulations. A single point of contact for all record keeping, free oral interpretation for your preferred language, and they're requiring the lender to stay within the preferred language throughout all communication. Now, there are some who kind of abide by that anyway to a certain extent, but to make it a federal law would really cause a huge burden in servicing. And then going on to say if there was a transfer of servicing, you couldn't foreclose for 60 days. Then another bill to require that we have a lease, a deed for lease program for all borrowers, or that we can't file a deficiency judgment after the house has been sold through foreclosure sale. So some really crazy stuff out there that right now doesn't look like it's going anywhere, but we'll watch it for you to, in the what are they thinking bucket. And then one last one, Senate 1315, it's called Relationship Lending Preservation Act. Essentially would make anybody who's part of the federal home loan bank system less than $10 billion in assets exempt from QM. Wow, that sounds great. What about the lenders? What about everybody else? Why did they get an unlevel playing field? So anyway, in my what are they thinking bucket that we hope goes nowhere for the rest of 2017 and 2018. So that's my report for you, Dave, to let all you know that something crazy happened. We're still going to watch it to make sure it stays in the no man's land bucket and doesn't go anywhere.
Well, we're going to rename this segment from the legislative update, regulatory update, to what are they thinking now?
Right.
That's great. I mean, some of the stuff, I mean, regulators, it's just like, my gosh, we got to encourage servicing retention, not discourage it. And that just has a tendency to play towards, you know, only the bigger guys will do it. And, of course, that creates more litigation opportunity. I mean, I just – what are they thinking, Alice? Great
what
segment title. I love it. What are they thinking? Ah, perfect. Excellent. Appreciate it. I'm really looking forward to getting you participate in the Hot Topic segment, Alice. It's going to be really good to get these veterans. We have Joe Murin, Gary Ort, as well as Jay Bremen, really get their thoughts on all of this. It's going to be a great historical perspective and looking forward. So looking forward from a historical perspective, we'll be back in that, folks, and with that, and first of all, Sam Garcia, then we're getting into the Hot Topic segment, so stay tuned. Jam-packed program today. Good to have you with us. And now let's run over and talk about the Mortgage Collaborative. We appreciate the opportunity to have them as a sponsor. So the Mortgage Collaborative with this ad. We'll take a brief break.
The Mortgage Collaborative was founded by former chairman of the NBA, John Robbins and David Kittle, and leaders at the forefront of the diversity movement in the real estate industry, Jim Park and Gary Acosta. The Mortgage Collaborative is the nation's only independent cooperative. The Collaborative provides its members the opportunity to meet and form meaningful relationships with top mortgage professionals and leaders in our industry. In a relationship-driven business such as ours, often who you know is as important as what you know. To learn more, go to mortgagecollaborative.com or call Rich Swarbinski at 440-552-0691. The power of the network.
Hey, thanks a lot, David. Finastra is extremely proud to be a key sponsor of the Lickin' On Lending program. known formerly as D&H, Finastra's Global Lending Division provides end-to-end solutions and innovation to the full spectrum of lenders, including independent mortgage bankers, community banks and credit unions, and even the largest banks globally. Learn more about how you provide an innovative digital experience for your borrowers by leveraging our multi-channel point-of-sale solution, which includes the new MortgageBot Mobile, by visiting our website at finastra.com.
Say a big special thank you, if I can get that out of my mouth, a big special thank you to all of our sponsors. They make this possible. There's an increasing number of expenses that we're doing. We're launching the new website this week. Check out the new Lickin' on Lending website. A lot's going into it, and you're going to be able to look at just – you want to look at all of Alice's comments, just look at the legislative update. It's all going to be stacked up under just her page. You want to find out what the market updates are from Joe Farr, you're going to go back and look at over a period of time. You can go into Joe's page. They're all stacked up right there. So we're segmenting each one of these out as well as having the main program. So a lot of new features in the new website, but it's taking extra time, extra budget goes into it, and we're grateful to our sponsors who are making that all possible. Sam Garcia is dialed in and is in the house. He's up there in hot Texas, Dallas, Texas, and it's good to have you in, Sam. It's MortgageDaily.com, folks. Check it out, MortgageDaily.com. Sam, what you got on the headlines for us?
Hey, thanks for having me on. And it is a little cooler up here today, so I appreciate that. I'll tell you that. This weekend was a little nicer. But anyway, among the best content we provide is a ranking of the biggest mortgage lenders. We get that data from quarterly reports from publicly traded companies and announcements, and also from our mortgage origination survey that we conduct. And that ranking, it comes as a new, with a new subscription, which costs just $149. So the biggest lenders in our first quarter report, in order of how big they were Wells Fargo, Chase, Quicken Loans, Bank of America, which wrestled the number four spot from PennyMac the prior quarter, and U.S. Bank. Those are the five biggest lenders we came up with. The top 10 lenders in all were responsible for nearly half of first quarter originations based on our estimates. Flagstar bumped PHH Corp from the number 10 spot, and Huntington Bank was the only company among the nearly 50 that we track that had a year-over-year increase at 19% at Huntington. And that gain really reflects the August 2016 acquisition of First Merit. On the servicing side of the industry, Citi fell off the top 10 servicer ranking. Citi previously announced, as you know, plans to dramatically reduce its servicing business. Citi's exit made room for Walter Investment to ascend to the top 10 servicers. Speaking of the biggest mortgage servicers, J.D. Power issued its annual study on servicer satisfaction. Among all servicers, the satisfaction score fell on an average. Even Quicken Loans, which has, you know, it's been ranked as the best servicer for 4 years in a row, saw a decline in its score. J.D. Power noted that borrowers said that their servicers are more focused on profit than customers. Basically, that's why we saw a little bit of a decline. It wasn't much, but it was in contrast to maybe rising in the past. Freddie Mac predicted in its July outlook, the housing forecast, that mortgage originations will total $1.8 trillion this year. And significance about that is that that was more than it expected a month earlier when its forecast had $1.755 trillion projected. So an improved outlook. Really, it was with both refinances and servicing. And even next year's forecast of $1.695 trillion was lifted from just $1.6 trillion the prior month. So good news for this year and next year based on economic reports over at Freddie. Our mortgage market index edged up last week by 3%. The index provides insight into upcoming originations based on rate lock volume at open close. And the good news is that home purchase financing drove the increase, rising 8% from the previous week. Purchase money production was also up from the same week last year by 7%. And that's significant because usually it's, and at least our report, it's been down on a year-over-year basis much of the last year. We just finalized the first quarter origination numbers, we're still collecting data for the second quarter. Quicken Loans participated in our mortgage origination survey and reported a servicing portfolio of $259 billion. That portfolio is expanded by $8 billion compared to 3 months earlier, and it's up by $44 billion compared to a year earlier. Originations, meanwhile, at Quicken rose 5% from the first quarter to $19.6 billion. Now, here's an interesting story we ran about using Alexa. As many of our listeners know here, Alexa is the voice-activated activated digital assistant from Amazon.com. And, you know, many such devices are being promoted by major technology companies. Well, anyway,
right.
American Financial Resources Wholesale Correspondent Division, which is known as AFR Wholesale, it announced last week that its mortgage broker clients can now use Alexa to get updates on their pipeline. And they had like an example scenario where, you know, Alexa, tell me my AFR pipeline or whatever the words were. And, you know, they started going slowly through the pipeline and tell them when it was expected to close and so forth. So that was kind of interesting. You know, always keep our eye on technology and where the future is going. MGIC announced changes to its mortgage insurance premiums, and the changes will result in lower rates for some programs and more choices for others. Another story of interest was that Atlantic Bay Mortgage Group reached an agreement to acquire Virginia Community Bank, so a mortgage banker acquiring a bank. Atlanta Bank was founded in 1996 by Brian Holland and has more than 120 locations now. One other story, Home Street revealed in its earnings report that it cut 73 mortgage jobs, and the layoffs were blamed on cost reductions tied to lower originations than they had expected previously. So it wasn't, you know, necessarily that they had a big drop in origination, it was just they expected more. Anyway, those are some of the biggest headlines, with, of course, the biggest lenders report being our big one today. We put that out each quarter. You know, had a bunch more to pick from here, but I got to limit myself because you got this really interesting segment coming up that I want to hear about.
Yeah, I'm really interested in it too. But that's great. It's really interesting, the data that you bring in. You've got a great reporting. You track all the major headlines, but it's the data that really I give you biggest kudos for. So thanks, Sam. Appreciate you bringing us an update from the from Mortgage Daily. So check it out, folks, mortgagedaily.com, or you can call Sam Garcia at 214-521-1300. Much appreciated. All right. Well, let's get over and let's hear from our friends at Arch MI, the leader of the pack, the leader of the herd, as they say. So let's hear from Shawnee Honadell.
Thanks, David. Glad to be a sponsor. Spring home buying's underway. The supply is tight and interest rates are rising. Are lenders ready to compete for purchase business, or will they get left behind? Arch MI RateStar is the best way to stay aggressive and stay ahead of the herd. Use our risk-based pricing program to assess individual loan risk more precisely. With RateStar, lenders lead their market the way Arch MI leads the MI industry. Lead with us.
I love that. Lead with us. And we also have Motivity Solutions, which now is owned by Black Knight. They have the key KPI, or the key performance indicator of the week. And so John Maynell, who is the VP of Client Services, I think he's now Senior VP of Client Services, has the KPI of the week. So, John, give us, what is this week's KPI?
Thanks very much, Dave. Always great to be here. And this week's key performance indicator focuses on one of Alice's favorite topics, namely the underwriting process. And the KPI is submitted to initial decision. This is generally measured in hours, and you can either use this to measure an entire department's average turn time or even individual underwriters. Very effective if you're using balanced multi-metric scorecards to fine-tune the behaviors of individual staff members. This measurement can also guide an organization to areas upstream from underwriting that contribute to this initial cycle time, like processing, setup, or even sales, to help ensure that people in those areas produce complete and accurate files that make the absolute best use of the underwriter's time. So the broad scope makes this a very powerful metric and shows yet again that what gets measured gets results. And with that, Dave, I will thank you again and turn it back to you.
Thank you, John. Much appreciated. By the way, Sam talked about using Alexa, the new device where you speak to it, give it instructions, and it brings back information. We saw a demonstration of that at work at the Motivity Users Conference about a month ago now up in Beaver Creek. It was unusual. Imagine where this world was going. You're going to have underwriters asking, hey, Alexis, how many loans do I have in the queue? How many loans have I approved this month versus what I've declined? I mean, you make these inquiries on a verbal basis into Alexa, and the data starts coming back. So we saw the demonstration. It is really interesting to see how technology is starting to come into this industry. So we're moving from the abacus into Alexa. So how about that? Anyway, so good to have you with us, everybody. We appreciate you as listeners. And again, this is the July 31st podcast, and we're continuing our discussion on GSE reform. We started off with Bill Cosgrove talking about how the impact that it's going to have on independent mortgage bankers and how this is good for independent mortgage bankers. Then we had David Stevens on talking about what's going on in the Hill, what's some of the policies that are being out there, gave us some of the things that are there. We're going to get more into depth into that. And then Jim Parrott was on last week, which is working closely with David Stevens. We're talking about, what are some of the things that are, what are some of the developments and some of the things moving behind the scenes. You want to go back and listen to those podcasts. They're all on the website, Lickin' on Lending. You'll see it all there, and I encourage you to go back there. Now, this week, we bring a distinguished panel of gentlemen together. We have Joe Murin, the past president of Jenny May, unique perspective on GSEs, and also Jay Brinkman, a former chief economist for the MBA. It's so good to have Jay back on the program. We've had him as a guest numerous times in the past. Back when he was at the MBA, he went into retirement, and I wouldn't say he's totally coming out of retirement. He is, but he is joining us on the panel, which I'll talk about in just a minute. And then someone who's working closely with me and a dear friend, Gary Ort, former president of Mortgage Finance Division at Texas Capital Bank, just recently retired. I'm referring to it as refiring. He's enjoying it. Now, if you know Gary Ort, this guy wears a suit and tie all the time, so I'm not sure how that transition is going to work. I've been teasing him. He's been out mowing his yard in shorts but still wearing a shirt and tie out there. But anyway, we've got this distinguished group, and we're excited to have them here. I realize I probably better turn on each of their microphones and get them involved in it. And I'm going to go to Joe in just a minute, but seeing as Jay has the comments, we referenced Jay earlier in the economic update. Jay Brinkman, I'm going to head over to you first and just kind of say, now that you're retired, but you're active in the market, you still do a lot of public speaking, but this market, 22,000, what's your perspective on it? And by the way, I had several people request, before you get into the discussion, let's get Jay's perspective on these markets. And so, Jay, what do you think? 22,000? Where's this heading?
Well, I would like to know, because I am in it, checking it many times a day and then doing my own trades now. But I think it's very much optimism on what may be coming. That if you look at the underlying GDP numbers, they're not quite there yet, but it's the idea, can we get rid of some of this regulation that's held the economy back for so long? Can we really get things moving again? And I think that is a key, and now we've had some a number of reports on corporate profits that have tended to sort of back that up. Certainly consumer optimism is there, largely I think because of the jobs numbers having looked so good. People are no longer as worried about losing their jobs, and that tends to build more so in the past. Unfortunately, I think a lot of it, though, is based upon what may be coming. Are we going to get the tax cuts? Are we going to get the regulatory improvements we're expecting? If that doesn't happen for whatever reason, I think we're going to see a retreating on the part of the market.
Yeah, especially when we saw what happened with Obamacare and the repeal that was expected. You look at what's going on, there was some disappointment. Besides which sides of the aisle you're on, there was some disappointment on that. So, yeah, it's going to be real interesting. This is we are in a unique season there on the Hill. And I imagine you're not missing any of that. I know you enjoyed your time with the MBA, I can't imagine you're really missing it. Several people said, ask Jay, this must be one of your friends, ask Jay, is he missing it in D.C.? So that's one question one of our listeners. So you can give a quick answer to that, and then I'll introduce the rest of the panel.
I'll give a quick answer. I have not been back, but people don't know this. 2014, the year I left, was the 200th anniversary of the British burning of Washington, D.C. I actually applied for a permit to do a reenactment. They suggested instead I leave town, and they haven't told me yet I can go back. So,
that's hilarious. I love your humor. We've had you on so many times when you were at the NBA, so it's good to have you back. Joining us again is Joe Murin. And, Joe, you're loved out there. Trisha Megliazzo sent me a note, says, oh, I love Joe. What a great group. I can't wait to listen to the program. So, Joe, you've got some fans out there. It's good to have you joining us. And for those, we're going to get over to Gary in a minute, but give us a little bit update on what you've been doing these days.
Are you talking to Gary?
Yeah, no, I'm talking to you, Joe. I'm sorry. I said we'll get to Gary in a minute. Give us an update on what Joe Murin is doing these days.
Well, I still have my finger inside the political environment a little bit. I mean, it's hard to get out once you've been in, but I think I feel a lot like Jay does that, you know, at some point in time they're going to ask me to get out, and that's okay, too. At my age, maybe that's something that should be done. But, you know, just staying busy consulting, running our nationwide title and settlement company, and staying out of the way of my daughters who are involved, you know, and I think they only ask me to get in when they need. Business has been good, but they only ask me to get in when they need money. So it's one of those things where you learn your place in the pecking order with your family, right? So I'm just staying.
Well, I've got two daughters, so. Well, it's good to have you here and taking time for your busy day to join us. I know the two-daughter thing's asking money. That's why I've got that down real, real well. Let's get over to Gary Orrett. Gary, good to have you with us. You, the most recent group to join the retirement group here. So, Gary, how are you really – has it really sunk in? You're retired yet?
No, not yet. It's still kind of like being on vacation. But, you know, it's only been a couple of weeks, but I'm enjoying it. And by the way, I do take exception to your comment about the shirt and tie. I did have a jacket on while I was cutting the grass also.
That's so funny. Anyone who knows Gary Orrett, he's probably one of the most buttoned-down professionals. I talked to Gary like I talked to Jay years ago about when you're into retirement, if you find yourself getting bored, you give me a call. I've got some ideas. So what we have done, folks, is Gary and I have formed this group. We've invited Joe in, Jay in, as well as Les Parker. We formed, and there's going to be many others joining in, but we're forming a board of advisory service. And this is, you know, many independent mortgage bankers and some community banks and credit unions that do not have any kind of guidance in there, or this is not governance. This is guidance talking about where the markets are going. So we have formed a new entity, and it's called Ainsworth Advisors. It is a board of advisory service. And so Texas Capital Bank was the first one to come on and take us on, and so we're excited to be serving in that capacity. So, Gary, I think they were a little worried about you retiring, and they go, we better bring a group of people, keep you kind of tiled into the mix. So, Gary, it's good to have you join us. Let's go over to Joe Murin and start off this discussion on GSE reform. Joe, there's probably not anybody – out there that has probably a better perspective with your activity, and having been the former president of Ginnie Mae, what's your take on this current attempt to of GSE reform? Give us your perspective.
Well, I think, David, you have to put this home ownership into perspective. So you have to ask yourself the question, what role do you think the federal government has in home ownership? And, you know, from my perspective, it's not to determine who should have a home and who should not have a home, but it's more, in my opinion, where the government should make sure that credit is available and that the liquidity should be at a reasonable price. And I think those are key. And from my perspective, I think no matter what structure they come up with, whether you agree that there should be a duopoly or not, you have to take into consideration that when I was out in the market, in the global markets, looking for liquidity, the single biggest thing that everybody requested or wanted to understand is that is there catastrophic coverage by the federal government, or is there an explicit guarantee? So from my perspective, to be able to maintain reasonably priced credit in the marketplace or liquidity in the marketplace, those that buy bonds are very, very interested in the government's role in the explicit guarantee. So I think whatever structure they come up with, they're going to have to ensure that there is explicit guarantee. And from my perspective, I think that means that they're not going to want any of these entities taking credit loss. So I think the private market's going to have to step up and take the credit loss, and the government will stand in behind that for the bond investors and guarantee principal and interest through their explicit guarantee. I mean, Ginnie's structure already does that. So the structure from our perspective is going to be how are they going to structure the GSEs to be able to work in that explicit environment on an ongoing basis. And if you listen to Secretary Mnuchin last week, he basically came out and said, we will have explicit guarantees. So I think if you start from that perspective and kind of work backwards, they're going to have to figure out how that's going to work, because today that is not the case. And I think for that to go forward, we're going to have to see that happen just like that.
What is your best guess of this reform actually happening this time around, Joe?
I think it will
happen
this time around.
Most probable, highly probable?
I think it's highly probable it's going to happen this time around. But I don't think it's going to happen until the current administration gets a win or two under their belt and where they're actually going to focus on something like home ownership. I think that the Hill is certainly focused on it at some point in time. They're going to move down this path. But we all know what Representative Hensarling's position is on this. I'm not in agreement with his position. I think he kind of wants to take us back to the Stone Age as it relates to the government's role in providing credit or the explicit guarantees and such. But I think they're going to address it, and hopefully sooner versus later, because I don't think we can continue down the path that we're on right now.
Several people, David Stevens, go ahead, Gary. Yes, jump in, please.
Gary, I think Joe is correct. I think that reform has to occur. I don't know that it will occur for the next 12 to 18 months, but the situation that we have now is simply not tenable and can't go forward. So it's going to come. You know, also, I think you find the previous administration was very passive regarding reform. They left it all to Congress. We all know what happens when you leave things to Congress. It doesn't occur.
Yep.
This administration, I think, will be far more aggressive. As Joe said, once they have a couple of wins under their belt, I think they will become much more aggressive in making changes.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. Going back to you, Joe, on a comment that someone just wrote in. They talked about Hensarling. You talk about Elizabeth Warren on the far left. You look at the far right, and there seems to be a general agreement. So from that standpoint, depends on where you look, up and down the whole line. Everyone's aligned with this thing. That hasn't always been the case. Talk about that a little bit. Several people wanted to get your perspective on the political environment. What's changed about it now?
Well, I think there's what the politicians say when they're on camera and what they talk about when they're off camera. And I think that's the issue. I think both sides of the aisle understand that there's work to do with the reformation of the GSEs. It's been almost a decade that we've been in this conservatorship. They all understand it has to happen. It depends on how it's going to happen and how that structure is going to look. So if we just step back and say that we don't believe that it's the government's job to determine who gets a home, who has home ownership, and who doesn't, then what is the government's role? And I think that plain and simply, because I'm a relatively pragmatic individual, I think that the government's role is to make sure that credit is available and that credit is available at a reasonable price. So, you know, if we were to turn the market, if we were to turn the GSEs over to the private markets, I think, you know, Jay Brinkman might agree with me that we would probably see the pricing of the bonds go up considerably. So just because, you know, without the backing of an explicit guarantee, you know, let's face it, they're going to want more skin in the game, so they're going to want a better return. So I think that's how I see this, and I think that we're coming down to the end, and I do believe that sometime during this administration's 4 years, we're going to see the reform take place, and it will be, in fact, something I think will be beneficial for homeownership going forward.
Jay, you and I have talked many times in the past about, in fact, you did some studies on what would be the consequences of the various GSE reform bills that have been put out there in the past. So it's good to have you on the program again. Talk about what the MBA has proposed in the past, kind of give us some historical perspective to it, and then talk about the pricing if we watch the more draconian Henseling initiatives go forward. So talk about it all.
Sure. You go back in history, Fannie Mae is very much an historical accident. The thing came about because Lyndon Johnson he ran into a problem of getting a debt limitation bill passed because he was trying to fight the Vietnam War, and the liberals were against him with that. Republicans didn't want to support him because of the Great Society programs, and he said, what can I do to avoid this? They said, well, if you take Fannie Mae off budget, set them up as a private company, and he said, do it. And so there was really not a whole lot of thought as to how you had this quasi-government organization operate as a private company. And this issue of one foot in the government, one foot in the private world has been something that Fannie Mae has worked. And really, it turned into a money machine only in the 90s when they kind of figured out how to do interest rate swaps, and computers got a lot faster to do the different scenarios, and Congress first approved some capital ratios that sort of gave it a stamp of approval. And the thing built, the industry became very dependent upon everything else they were offering, and then all of a sudden you get the collapse. They go into conservatorship and say, what do we do? And you had generations of people say, well, I don't know, what have we ever done without them? And everybody began to think, how is it going to impact my particular business model? So you had the large institutions saying, look, we need them for this, but we don't want to get them over across this bright line doing that. Smaller companies said, look, I need somebody to help me compete against Wells. I don't really care about any of this other stuff. I don't care about systemic risk. I don't care about whether too big, I need a counterpart to the Chases and the B of A's and the Wells and all that. And then they say, we'd really like a different cash window. We need that. And the big guys would say, well, no, we don't want anybody competing with us with a cash window. You put all that together and say, okay, MBA, form a committee and come up with a solution. So when you look at the solutions really that have been proposed over the years, it's been sort of this, yeah, we can't have that. We ought to have some new organizations develop that can sort of act like utilities, so they don't make too much money. And really, that's the MBA position has continued along that route. I think it's been overly complicated. There's simpler solutions. If you go back to what Joe was talking about, what really is the role? Two overarching concerns. One is the affordable housing business, which I think is really what kept the Obama administration from doing anything for 8 years on this. I mean, I traipsed up to Treasury more times than I want to count to brief the latest hires there as to what they're going to do, and they put together this big plan, and nothing would come of it because it would hit some level in the White House that would just block it. The other issue, of course, is what do you do about the preferred shareholders that claim they still have vested interest? You've got the independent community banks who are saying, look, just let them retain some money and they can recapitalize. And I say, people, look, you realize these are the most overpaid insurance agents in the world. All they're doing is selling taxpayer-provided insurance, and you want them now to keep the premium so they can then spin off and start their own company. I don't think it works like that. I think there are much simpler solutions that Congress ought to consider.
So let's talk about one of those. Talk about when you and I were together in Dallas for the Texas Capitol Board Advisory meeting, you said simplicity is so important, And it doesn't have to be as complicated as we're making it. If you hear about a committee forming anything, I think what did someone say, that a moose is an example of a committee in heaven that came up with creating an animal? It's one of the ugliest things out there. But, so what is one of the simplest solutions? And you and I talked about it, but I'd like to have you share that briefly with our audience.
Sure. If you think about what is the source of bringing private capital into bearing credit risk in mortgages, it's the MI companies. I've long thought that you simply say, you don't recharter new ones. You simply say, as a first step, Fannie and Freddie, guess what? 50% MI coverage to really shift virtually all except for the catastrophic risk over the MIs, and then gradually build up the capital needed, not in Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, but in the various MIs as they absorb this. And at some point, Fannie and Freddie simply disappear, and you have this single guarantor. You have an agency like the FDIC that then manages the credit guarantors, the MIs. You don't try and limit their returns, but instead you build on competition. You have ones that say, I'm going to be targeted at the independent community banks. I am really going to go out of my way to work with the independent mortgage bankers. You look at competition as a basis of doing that, with the government only providing the standby guarantee that you need to sell the bonds internationally. You go to a single security that's deliverable to TBAs, and I think we've got it.
Yeah,
stay away from all this other trying to create a market.
Yeah, Gary?
Dave, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Gary.
Yeah, go ahead. No, Joe, well, you jumped in here. Go ahead.
Well, I think, if you take a look at the Ginnie model, and I am biased, but Ginnie has been the redheaded stepchild of this industry for decades. And if you look at the simplicity of the entity and how it works, and the fact that over its almost 50-year history, it really has never had any losses, you have to take into consideration what's going on there and why is it so successful. And I think that if you take a look at Ed DeMarco, and where Ed's position now, Ed's over the president of the Housing Policy Council, and we now have Michael Bright, who was his partner over at Milliken, is now the number two person at Ginnie Mae. These people understand that this is a very simple process that works in the marketplace, and I can tell you, during 2008 and 2009, when the marketplace was, in shambles, when I was sitting in the Ginnie chair, everybody mm-hmm. really relied on Ginnie Mae at that time, because our outstandings went from about $7-8 billion a month to $75 billion a month. So there was a lot of liquidity. It is a very simplified process, but it does work, and the global markets like it because it's fundamentally straightforward, and they've got explicit guarantees. So there's nothing wrong with a solution for the GSEs that kind of mirrors what goes on there, which means that Ginnie Mae doesn't take the credit loss. So I think if we're going to be simplistic, we have to think about looking at that, what really has worked significantly for the last 4 or 5 decades, and say, how can we apply some of that thought process to the new GSE model that the regulators have to consider?
That's a good point. I'm going to go back to Gary. I'm going to bring you in just a minute, but I want to run back to Jay, because we've had a flurry of inquiries here on one point and pricing. If we were to see the federal government, more of a henceling, the more radical proposals come to pass, what would happen to pricing? And you studied that numerous times. Where what if we just had all implicit guarantee taken out, Jay? What is it, a half a point rise, or what would happen?
Well, I think in this market it's more than that, because most of what we had done in the past was when we still had an active private label market. As anemic as that is, and what's going in is, just a little bit higher in the DTIs, largely jumbos. I think for the average person on the street, you could easily see, 100 basis points, unless you've got the large banks willing to put something in a whole bunch of stuff in portfolio. which I don't think the regulators want to see. So.
I agree.
Yeah, they don't want that. They're not going to have that. Yeah, for sure. Gary, let's get over to you. It's so much fun. I'm so excited to be doing this advisory panel with you. You and I are doing this together. I came up with the idea, but so busy, I was looking for someone to really kind of carry the torch on this, and you signed up. I'm so glad, and it's so good to be able to have these kind of guys on a panel. Like you and I both said, sometimes we feel like we're the dumbest guys in the room, but it's good to be, sit around with the wisdom of Jay and Joe and Les and that. But Gary, what is your perspective about this and what GSM reform is going to mean to the mortgage, to the lenders out there? Got thoughts on that, as well as warehouse lenders?
Well, GSEs, as both Jay and Joe said, they're vital to the industry for liquidity. But, you know, everybody
right.
has to stop and think that let's just go back in time about 10 years. And prior to the conservatorship, small and mid-sized lenders have to recall and remember what happened prior to that. There were large lenders, money center banks, large national lenders that got constant waivers, exceptions, reduced G fees, which gave them a tremendous competitive advantage that the small lender or the intermediate or lender couldn't match. In fact, if you go back and look statistically, and I think Jay probably developed these because it came out of the NBA, I think, from about 2003 or 2004 until 2010, the top 10 banks, and that's counting money center banks, large national mortgage bankers, increased their market share from about 40% to almost 80%. Now think about that. And then if you're a small mortgage banker or a medium-sized mortgage banker, how in the world do you ever compete with that? When the conservatorship came into place, everybody got a level playing field. And everybody was on the same thing, and you didn't have these waivers that were given and G fee exceptions given. And now that the business has begun to slow down a little bit, you're seeing the first indications of that returning with some of the GSEs, because Fannie and Freddie are now having to compete again. And believe me, there is a competitiveness between those two. And you're beginning to see the indications of some of these things starting to slip back in with exceptions given, waivers granted, and some GCs perhaps beginning to change. I just think small and medium-sized mortgage bankers need to understand that GSE reform is coming. Will it be in the next 6 months? I don't think so, but it will be, I think, as Joe mentioned, or Jay, I don't recall which one, it will be within the first 4 years of the Trump administration. It's going to come. And the way it needs to come about is through law, not through administrative action. For example, mail watch term ends at the FHFA January of 2019. He could leave any time before that, but that's when his term ends. He was of the opinion that we want a level playing field and everything should be equal regardless of the size of your volume.
Yeah.
His replacement could take the position that the government's needs should be less involved. They could start lowering G fees. They could increase them. They can change loan amounts because it just simply takes the stroke of a pen when you're doing it through an administrative action where law is much harder to change.
Gary, you're hitting on a point.
Gary, you're hitting on a point
which is a consistent theme throughout all the interviews we've had. There is this sense of uncertainty when Mel Watts goes out of what Trump's administration might bring in as a replacement. I'm getting a lot of questions that are going to you, Joe, coming in as we're discussing this, about that very thing. Do you have a sense of who he might bring in or what we could anticipate as a replacement to Mel Watts?
You know, anytime you think you know what Trump's going to do, you might as well just pass because you can go out almost up and down the line of a lot of his appointments, and you'd have never thought that A or B would have been chosen. So I really don't know, and it depends on, I'm sure that Secretary Mnuchin is going to have a lot to say about who gets that post. But the question is going to be, and I'm not sure that I don't agree with Gary in some respects. I don't know whether Mel Waddle will stay through the January 2019 term.
Oh, really?
He may exit before that.
I think he will. Too.
That's interesting.
You said the uncertainty that's been created in Washington. I mean, good God, every day today there's uncertainty and crisis in Washington and change of things. That just that uncertainty in the mortgage business or any banking business dealing with money, uncertainty is like a cancer. You've got to know what's going to happen and what's going to occur. And that's a problem right now, the dysfunction in Washington.
It is so true. We've got to get Alice and Joe in on this discussion. We don't have to. I want them. They always have great perspective. Joe, Alice, you've been listening to this, so let's start with you, Alice, being the gentleman that we are. We let you go first. Your thoughts as you listen to this, questions for the panel?
Oh, this is great stuff. I'm going to have to go back and listen to it because I can't write fast enough. But so I would like – I'm very interested, Joe and Jay. You both brought up two things that I wonder if they go together or they're two completely separate. So, Joe, you brought up about – you know, take the Ginnie Mae model, take the issuer model, but still within the FHA and VA loans that Ginny takes are guarantees or somewhat of an insurance from the government, another branch, obviously. So to get kind of a conventional feel to it, is that where the PMI companies come in? You know, how do we get that second layer of insurance in there if the Ginnie Mae model is the way to go?
Well, I think you're absolutely right, Allison. I think we're going to have to bring in the MI model into play for the GSEs. But don't forget, I think that if you're in the VA lending business, you've got to want to be in the VA lending business because, you know, basically, you've got a lot of skin in the game. So, but I'm not so sure that I don't think that the FHA shouldn't look more like that. I think some of the problems that we've had historically within the FHA program. that program should look a little bit more like the VA program than the way it does today. So from my perspective, I think the GSEs are going to have to get the MIs more involved in their program if, in fact, we're going to get the private markets to take more of the first hit than they currently do.
Jay, you want to add to that?
Sure. I think – part of it would be looking at an FDIC backup program for the institutions that the MIs would evolve into so that just like we have banks that are allowed to fail, but that depositors ultimately are protected there, they pay for this, they're regulated, but we maintain the competition.
Yes, good. That was one thing you brought out when we were together that I really liked. Is an FDIC model kind of the backstop to the MI companies out there. Gary, you want to add? Then if not, I would run over to Joe. But, Gary, you want to opine to what's been said?
Well, just the only thing I would add in closing is all the discussions over the last 3 or 4 weeks show that this is not an easy solution. We as an industry tend to be fragmented, too. When you look at the realtors and their lobbying efforts, it's a united front. Community banks present a united front. We tend to have different organizations with different agendas. The best one, in my opinion, being the MBA, and anybody that's not a member of the MBA needs to really look at that. That's vitally important as a lobbying. But this is important and it's complicated, so we've got to make sure that our voice is heard regularly and consistently. Because you've heard all the different changes and nuances to it that make it very difficult.
Yep, that is for sure. Joe, I want to get you in on this discussion. So your thoughts as you listen to this and questions for the panel?
Yeah, a quick question along the lines of what Jay was talking about, which is simplicity. And early on, I questioned why on earth are we trying so hard to get Fannie and Freddie in sync And so, Jay, I ask you, what's the logic that's being used to justify having the two utilities at the end when it seems so much more simple just to have one?
Well, and part of what I've seen in some of the proposals is to say, well, let's have multiple utilities. And I said, well, I'm a finance guy, not a utility economist, but I always thought of utilities when you only had one and you needed a regular price to provide the electricity. So the idea of having multiple competing utilities where everybody gets the same rate of return, essentially, doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me. I think we need a single security that trades that people can understand and put the guide rails around that in terms of prepay speeds. We're working toward that with the fungible TBA delivery with Fannie and Freddie. Unfortunately, it doesn't look like the common security platform will be there until, well, pretty much when Mel Watt leaves, I think, is when they might be finishing the thing. But that is going to be important in maintaining liquidity going forward. So we can't expect these new entities to, on their own, be issuing securities with any kind of adequate liquidity. But to do what they're supposed to do, which is just provide the credit, handle whatever administrative and reaching out to lenders and making credit available at the lowest possible cost, and let the market take it from there. And what Joe says is build on what works with the Ginnie system.
Excellent. Joe, you want to add to that, and then we'll get back to you, Gary, and we'll wrap it up.
No, I mean, like I said, I'm relatively simplistic and pragmatic, and if I take a look at what they need to do, I just hope they don't overcomplicate it, because I don't necessarily think they need to.
Yeah, I agree. Gary, close
and
it
I
up,
agree.
Wrap up this segment.
Yeah, and I agree as well.
Well, this has been just such a good discussion. We have this much wisdom. Gary and I have talked about when we have this much wisdom sitting around a table, you just want to keep going. But this program is supposed to be in an hour format. We've gone just a little bit beyond that. The nice thing is we're not regulated. We're not having to fight up against that. But so I appreciate you gentlemen staying a little bit longer and you listeners staying on there as well. Next week, we have Mark Jones joining us. He's the one that has retained servicing. And we're going to talk about the consequences of GS reform and what it could mean to the servicing world. So I'll be recording an interview with Mark this week, and then he's heading back to D.C. for a meeting, so we'll be playing that interview next week. Be sure to tune in. Folks, we appreciate you tuning in, being here with us. I want to again say a special thank you to Joe Murin, Jay Brinkman, Gary Ort, and, of course, all our regular distinguished panelists, Alice and Joe and Sam, and for everyone's contribution. Thank you so much for tuning in and listening to us. We'll be back next week with our special guest, Mark Jones. Have a great week, everybody.
You've been listening to Lickin on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update with your host, David Lickin of Transformational Mortgage Solutions. Join us next week, and thanks for listening.